Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Global Citizen International Digest. I'm Mel Gertov. I'll be reporting and commenting on the most important and sometimes the most neglected international news of the week. Here are today's top stories. In England, protesters crowd out the far right. The chips war with China is proving hard to win. And U.S. bases in the Middle East, deterrence or targets? First, in England, protesters crowd out the far right. Anti-immigrant right-wing groups in England had set cities and police forces on edge when they rioted at the start of August, breaking into asylum centers and law offices and damaging mosques. Police mobilized in several cities and had to call in reserves. But contrary to expectations of more violence, ordinary people came into the streets in several cities in counter-protests that drove most of the far-right groups away. In parts of London, for instance, The Guardian reports that, quote, thousands of local people and anti-fascist activists came together and held placards saying, "We are one human race," and "Unite against hate." In the end, The Guardian reports, counter-protesters outnumbered those supporting the far-right-led protests. It was a win for decency and human rights. A police spokesman said, quote, "The law-abiding public have no time for the mindless criminality we have seen, and last night proves that. We must thank our communities for standing united against wanton thuggery." With order restored, Britain and its new Labour government must now deal with two contending issues: the underlying causes of the rioting, which centred in the economically worst off parts of Britain, anger at immigration, few jobs and declining health care and other public services, and the far right's hate speech aimed at arousing violence. Prime Minister Keir Starmer will have to do more than simply arrest people. He will have to deal with the way the far right used social media. A former Twitter executive has suggested threatening Elon Musk with an arrest warrant as one way to deter the far right's online lying. Nor can Starmer repeat his predecessor's disastrous plan on immigration by sending asylum seekers back to Rwanda. As one commentator put it, quote, "The animosities underpinning the riots, hatred of Muslims and migrants alike, have long found expression in Britain's political culture, not least under the previous Conservative government, whose cornerstone commitment was to stop the boats on which migrants made their way to British shores." Unquote. Next, the chips war with China is proving hard to win. Preventing China from acquiring the most advanced semiconductor chips and simultaneously building up U.S. chip capacity are huge undertakings. The former aim requires plugging holes in the global supply chain and gaining the cooperation of the major chip manufacturers. The latter aim requires a huge investment commitment by the chip makers, such as Intel, Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing Company, TSMC, and Microsoft, in the hundreds of billions of dollars, subsidized by the U.S. government under the CHIPS and Science Act. Both aims have been difficult to achieve. The first, to attract chip making to the U.S., was thought to have been met when TSMC, Taiwan's premier semiconductor company, committed in 2020 to building a $65 billion plant outside Phoenix. The Biden administration gave the company a $6.6 billion subsidy under the CHIPS Act. TSMC has yet to produce any chips. The reasons are the same as those that have troubled Chinese investors from the People's Republic: cultural clashes between Taiwan and American workers over workplace practices. The Taiwanese simply work harder and longer than American workers, and training the most skilled engineers takes many months. If you've ever seen the movie American Factory, you know what this is about. Now the expectation is that TSMC will start producing chips early next year, though if Trump is elected, production could be complicated. He has assailed the subsidy deal with TSMC, arguing that Taiwan will ultimately keep control of chip making. As for the aim to keep chips out of Chinese hands, it has largely been defeated by globalization, that is, the worldwide supply chain, which has resulted in a lively chips market in China despite U.S. national security bans on exports. Although NVIDIA's advanced AI chips have been kept from being exported to China, The Times reports that it spoke with representatives of 11 companies in China that said they sold or transported banned NVIDIA chips, and found dozens more businesses offering them online. The Times also found procurement documents showing that more than a dozen Chinese state-affiliated entities purchased restricted chips, including organizations under sanction for modernizing the Chinese military, unquote. In a word, the global supply chain makes it all too easy to get around U.S. export controls, and the profit motive is outpacing national security considerations. U.S. bases in the Middle East, deterrence or targets? When the supreme leader of Iran says he's going to avenge, we have to take that seriously. We've got to make darn sure that we're ready and we have the capabilities in the region to be able to help Israel defend itself and, quite frankly, defend our own people and our own facilities. So said White House National Security Communications Advisor John Kirby. Obscured by that statement is the large number of U.S. bases and other military facilities spread across the Middle East, facilities that have been ripe targets for attack by Iran-backed militants and other groups. An investigation by Nick Tulsi for The Intercept finds that in all, the U.S. has 60 bases and other military access points. These sites, says Tulsi, range from small combat outposts to massive air bases in 13 countries, and they house altogether about 30,000 troops. The Pentagon will not acknowledge, much less divulge, most information about these deployments. As the U.S. moves more naval and air power into the Middle East to deter Iran and Hezbollah, its proxy, questions arise about their value, measured against the costs in U.S. lives and the security of friendly countries. Malta counts at least 145 U.S. dead since last October, the latest being the rocket attack on Al-Asad Air Base in Iraq, August 5th, that reportedly injured 5 U.S. military personnel and contractors. When the question is asked about whether or not the U.S. will be involved in a wider war in the region, the answer is that it already is, mainly a proxy war with Iran that is proving very costly. In other news, U.S. containment of China continues, and China continues protesting. Countries friendly to the U.S., or at least concerned about a threat from China, are boosting their security situations, mainly with U.S. encouragement, and in some cases with substantial U.S. funds. One example is the U.S.-Philippines alliance. Secretary of State Blinken and Secretary of Defense Austin met with Philippines President Ferdinand Marcos Jr. recently to announce new military funding to boost the Philippines' external defense and help establish a military intelligence-sharing pact between the two nations. As I have been reporting, confrontations are quite regular between heavily armed Chinese Coast Guard vessels and Philippine ships in a part of the South China Sea that does belong to the Philippines. Each side constantly accuses the other of reckless actions, though just recently they reached a provisional agreement that allows the Philippines to resupply an old ship in the disputed area. Another component of containment of China is Japan's closer strategic alignment with U.S.-China policy. During the U.S. and Japan's 2+2 security talks, these are talks led by each country's defense chief and top diplomat, both sides affirmed upgrading the command and control of U.S. forces in Japan, as well as strengthening American-licensed missile production. The commander of the roughly 50,000 U.S. troops stationed in Japan will now have greater command authority. Kamikawa Yoko, Japan's foreign minister, said, quote, "We are standing at an historic turning point as the rules-based, free, and open international order is shaken to the core. Now it is a critical phase when our decision today determines our future." Secretary Austin said China is, quote, "engaging in coercive behavior, trying to change the status quo in the East and South China Seas, around Taiwan, and throughout the region." As usual, nothing was said about the impact on Chinese strategic thinking of all these expanded military arrangements around China's periphery. Vietnam has also been active in response to adverse developments with China. A Vietnamese Coast Guard vessel visited the Philippines for a joint exercise, and Vietnam is doing what China has been doing, expanding island outposts in the South China Sea that it controls by adding land, clearly in response to tensions between China and Philippines. Finally, the U.S. Navy is reportedly investigating new sites in the Indian Ocean for base construction. The potential locations include Australia's Cocos Islands, Timor-Leste, and Papua New Guinea for anticipated construction projects under the so-called Pacific Deterrence Initiative, again with China in mind. Naturally, China has denounced these developments. A Chinese foreign minister spokesman said, quote, "They claim to promote regional peace and a rules-based international order, but are actually forming blocs, cobbling together exclusionary groupings, manipulating political games, and creating confrontations which are real threats to regional peace and stability," unquote. The spokesman specifically cited attempts to change the status quo in the South China Sea and U.S. efforts to bring together security coalitions aimed at China. What has happened to the five 9/11 detainees? CNN published the first photos of a War on Terror detainee in a CIA black site. The man is Ammar al-Baluchi, one of five at Guantanamo Bay accused by the U.S. government of plotting the 9/11 attacks. The Pentagon announced that three of the five men, but not Baluchi, had agreed to plead guilty to all charges and would avoid possible death sentences. All of these men, along with about 100 others, had been subjected to torture at various black sites between 2002 and 2008 before being transferred to Guantanamo. No trials have occurred. Instead, the detainees have been tortured in ways that humiliate and sexually abuse them. The CIA probably has thousands of pictures that document the abuse, but of course they are highly classified. So CNN's photos were a first. China brings Palestinian factions together. Maybe. China's Middle East diplomacy has had little impact, but it has succeeded at bringing together the two major Palestinian factions that have long been at odds. In a so-called Beijing declaration, Hamas and Fatah agreed to work together to create conditions for a single Palestinian state in the Gaza Strip, Jerusalem, and the West Bank. The idea is to form a unity government, hold elections, and eventually create a new state. Two obstacles stand in the way: Israel's opposition to both groups as governing authorities, and a history of discord between Fatah and Hamas, despite many proclamations of reconciliation in the past. In fact, in recent months, Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas accused Hamas of prolonging the Gaza war, and Hamas leaders in turn accused Abbas of siding with Israel. Finally, one illiberal democracy is overthrown, another democracy clamps down. Student-led protests in Bangladesh over several weeks have toppled the government of Sheikh Hasina. The daughter of Bangladesh's previous leader, Sheikh Mujibur Rahman, she had ruled since 2009, having been elected four times. Despite a number of achievements, including increased economic growth and personal income, and advances in women's rights, Prime Minister Hasina also became more authoritarian. According to a New York Times account, quote, "Over the past 15 years, Ms. Hasina deeply entrenched her authority and divided the nation. Those who kissed the ring were rewarded with patronage, power, and impunity. Dissenters were met with crackdowns, endless legal entanglement, and imprisonment," unquote. The patronage issue, giving a percentage of government jobs to loyalists, is what touched off the demonstrations. From Dhaka, Amnesty International reports, quote, "The peaceful protests were met with a severe crackdown from the police, military, and paramilitary units. Violence led to deaths of more than 300 people, with thousands more injured and more than 10,000 believed to have been arrested or arbitrarily detained. Amnesty International verified evidence of unlawful force being used against protesters. These attacks included the use of tear gas, rods, sticks, bricks, and firearms. Additionally, last month the internet was shut down for nearly a week and a curfew was installed, with a shoot-on-site order from authorities. Student protesters rose up and called on people from across the country to march to the Capitol." On August 4th, the protesters defied the security forces and made their way to Hasina's official residence, taking it over and forcing her to flee. The military has announced plans to form a transitional government. Meantime, the country's president made an extraordinary interim appointment to head the country, Muhammad Yunus, a Nobel laureate known worldwide for implementing microfinance programs in Bangladesh to spur local-level development with small grants, mainly to women. Yunus will have a tough job, bringing the violence to an end, negotiating on new elections, and obtaining cooperation from the army and police. Next door in Thailand, democracy suffered in a different way. One of the country's most popular politicians was banned from politics for 10 years, and his party ordered disbanded, all because he persisted in efforts to end lèse majesté laws that protect the monarchy from criticism. Thailand's constitutional court issued these orders against Pita Limjaronaut and his Move Forward party, which came in first in general elections and led Pita to bid to become prime minister. But as often happens in Thai politics, military-backed parties blocked him and installed the current prime minister, Sirleaf Thavisin. The court's decision has been roundly criticized by the U.S. and the European Union. A spokesman for the UN General Assembly said, "It's a setback to pluralism and democracy in Thailand and fundamental freedoms of association and expression." That's the Global Citizen International Digest for the week. I'm Mel Gertov. Thanks for listening, and take good care.